Hey, O'Reilly listeners, I have something a little bit different for you today. It's actually a podcast I think you'll like called The President's Daily Brief. Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. Well, now you can get your very own President's Daily Brief in the form of a podcast hosted by former CIA Operations Officer Mike Baker. Here's an example of what you get when you listen to the President's Daily Brief.
It's Friday, 5 April. Oh, look at that. It's the birthday for one of my most excellent brothers. Happy birthday, Mark. Remember, it's not the years, it's the mileage. Welcome to the President's Daily Brief. I'm Mike Baker, your eyes and ears on the world stage. Let's get briefed. We'll begin today's show with the continued fallout over the death of 7 aid workers in Gaza, with the head of the organization now accusing Israel of purposefully targeting the aid convoy, an accusation that Israel is calling absurd. Coming up later in the show, we'll take a deep dive into recent statements from a U.S. State Department official who claims Russia has nearly fully rebuilt its military capabilities following substantial losses incurred during its conflict in Ukraine. Plus, the war in Gaza is leading to more headaches for President Biden on the domestic front, with a closed-door meeting with Muslim leaders turning contentious at the White House. And in today's Back of the Brief, we'll return to our coverage of the attacks in the Red Sea, with the U.S. now potentially looking for a diplomatic resolution to the crisis. But first, today's spotlight. The pressure continues to mount on Israel after an IDF airstrike killed several humanitarian aid workers in Gaza on Monday. As we reported earlier this week, 3 vehicles belonging to the World Central Kitchen were hit in quick succession, killing 7 of the organization's members. The group's founder, Chef Jose Andres, is now accusing the Israeli military of directly targeting members of his organization, dismissing the Israelis' explanation that the attack was an accident. Speaking to Israel's Channel 12, Andres said, quote, "The airstrikes on our convoy, I don't think, were an unfortunate mistake. It was really a direct attack on clearly marked vehicles whose movements were known by everybody at the IDF," end quote. Andres went on to say that the 3 vehicles were targeted systematically and that it was very clear who they were and what they were doing. Now, the World Central Kitchen is demanding an independent third-party investigation of the attacks to determine whether they were carried out intentionally or otherwise violated international law. The Israeli government is pushing back on Andres' claims. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's foreign policy advisor, Ophir Falk, called the claims absurd, telling ABC News that the last thing Israel would want is to endanger civilian lives. Now, frankly, an investigation is just what this incident needs. What should be made clear from the investigation in particular is just what coordination took place between the World Central Kitchen and the IDF, exactly what movements were coordinated, what were the agreed upon or coordinated times and routes for movements, and was there any deviation from the coordinated plan by the WCK vehicles. They're operating in an active war zone, so it's imperative that all movements by any humanitarian groups are coordinated closely and that there are no movements outside those coordinated plans because you're in an active war zone. The stakes are obviously too high for the parties involved to stray from agreed-upon plans. For the sake of all existing and future humanitarian groups and workers operating in Gaza, an investigation should examine this element of the incident and ensure that whatever went wrong doesn't happen again. Returning to Netanyahu's foreign policy advisor, Falk said, quote, "This war is a complex war. The incident happened in the middle of the night. It should not have happened, and we'll do everything possible to ensure it doesn't happen again." He added, quote, "We understand the outcry," end quote. Despite the Israeli government's contrition, the incident already appears to be taking its toll on Prime Minister Netanyahu domestically. For the first time since October 7th, a member of Israel's war cabinet is publicly calling for new elections. Israeli war cabinet minister Benny Gantz has called for early elections to take place in September, saying the Jewish state needs to renew the people's trust in their government. In a press briefing on Wednesday, Gantz said, quote, "Setting such a date will allow us to continue the military effort while signaling to the citizens of Israel that we will soon renew their trust in us," end quote. Netanyahu has repeatedly rejected calls for early elections, claiming it would interfere with the war effort against Hamas and the ongoing hostage negotiations. As of right now, elections are set for 2026. Adding to the pressure, President Biden reportedly issued a sharp warning to Netanyahu on Thursday. During a tense 30-minute phone call, Biden reportedly told the prime minister that an immediate ceasefire was necessary and added that any future U.S. support for the war in Gaza will depend on implementing new steps to protect civilians and aid workers. All right, coming up after the break, we'll take a look at a U.S. State Department official's claim that Russia's military strength is back in full force after taking heavy losses in the Ukraine conflict. Also, tensions flare in a White House closed-door session with Muslim leaders, adding to President Biden's domestic challenges amidst the Gaza conflict. I'll be right back. Welcome back. Shifting our focus to Russia, it appears that the Putin regime's military is proving more resilient than previously thought. Deputy Secretary of State Kurt Campbell warned on Wednesday that their intelligence shows Russia has nearly fully rebuilt its military capabilities, despite facing staggering losses on the battlefields of Ukraine. The surprising assessment appeared to contradict previous assessments by the Pentagon and European allies, which estimated it would take Russia at least 5 to 7 years to build back its forces for a full-scale war. That's according to a report from Defense News. While he did not elaborate, Campbell said, quote, "We have assessed over the course of the last couple of months that Russia has almost completely reconstituted its military." Russia claims to have 1.32 million active military personnel and 2 million reserve military personnel. U.S. intelligence agencies said in December, however, that some 315,000 Russian troops had been killed or wounded since the war began. That figure has since been revised upward to roughly 355,000, nearly the total number of ground troops that Moscow began the war with. While Russian forces have been slowly advancing in Ukraine as Kyiv faces ammunition shortages on the front lines, those gains continue to come at a relatively staggering cost to Russian personnel and equipment. So the question, how is Russia managing to replace their forces and equipment so quickly? Well, at least on the equipment front, it appears that they are obviously getting an assist from sympathetic partners abroad, and that would mean China, North Korea, and Iran. As we've discussed on the PDB, North Korea and Iran have become reliable sources for munitions and missiles to restock Putin's dwindling supplies. China, meanwhile, has maintained close financial ties with the Putin regime amid the war, providing critical economic support to Russia's industrial base. A senior Biden administration official told Defense News, quote, "We've really seen the People's Republic of China start to help to rebuild Russia's defense industrial base, essentially backfilling the trade from European partners," end quote. Putin has also surged defense spending since 2022, which now accounts for roughly 6% of Russia's national GDP. And in terms of manpower, Putin has no qualms about mining his country's large population for fresh recruits. As we discussed earlier this week, Russia is preparing for a new wave of military mobilization of up to 300,000 people ahead of a planned summer offensive in Ukraine. And meanwhile, Kyiv is struggling to keep their head above water as a U.S. aid package continues to languish in a divided U.S. Congress. President Zelensky recently warned that Ukraine faces a dark future if further U.S. aid does not eventually get approved. Zelensky told the Washington Post last week, quote, "If there is no U.S. support, it means that we have no air defense, no Patriot missiles, no jammers for electronic warfare, no 155-millimeter artillery rounds. It means we will go back, retreat, step by step in small steps," end quote. All right, turning back to the Israel-Hamas conflict, the Biden administration is facing increasing backlash from the American Muslim community for its handling of the war in Gaza. A planned event at the White House on Tuesday, meant to celebrate the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, started to unravel for the Biden administration in recent weeks when Muslim community leaders began declining the invitations, according to a report from the Washington Post. Invitees already angered over Biden's support for Israel were reportedly offended by the idea of having a celebratory dinner at the White House as residents in Gaza go hungry. A Palestinian-American doctor who was in Gaza in January told the Washington Post, quote, "How can we talk to you about famine and starvation over bread and steak?" The quick backlash regarding the invites caused the Biden administration to pivot at the last minute, scrapping plans for a formal dinner and instead hosting a 90-minute meeting between President Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, and only six Muslim community leaders who were still willing to engage with the administration. That sounds like it was a fun meeting. If the reports are any indication, well, the meeting did not go well. One Palestinian-American doctor walked out of the meeting after relaying his concerns about the conflict. He told the Washington Post, quote, "Part of me wanted to express the frustration that the entire community has, the anger and the resentment. But also, part of me wanted to get up and walk out on the decision makers and give them an idea of how it feels to have somebody walk away from them," end quote. Another doctor said she was left stunned after showing President Biden prints of photos of malnourished children and women in Gaza that she herself had taken, only for the president to remark that he had already seen those photos. Oh. The doctor told NBC News, quote, "This speaks volumes to the dismissive nature of the administration," end quote. At least one attendee, however, said they felt Biden and Harris were respectful and listened closely to the concerns of the group. Still, this year's Ramadan fiasco for the White House was night and day from celebrations just last year, when the Biden administration held an event with hundreds of community leaders who heaped praise on the administration and took selfies with the president. Anger among Muslim Americans towards the Biden administration and Democrat Party has been growing more intense in recent weeks. Palestinian protesters disrupted a recent Biden campaign event with former Presidents Barack Obama and Bill Clinton. And it's likely that the divide within the Democrat Party will only deepen as the presidential election in November approaches. Okay, coming up in the back of the brief, we revisit the Red Sea crisis, exploring America's potential pivot towards a diplomatic solution as the attacks from the Iranian-backed Houthis continue. I'll be right back. In today's back of the brief, it's been close to 6 months since Iranian-backed Houthi militants in Yemen began missile and drone attacks on commercial shipping and U.S. and allied naval vessels in the Red Sea. And despite the group falling out of the headlines, well, the attacks continue. On Wednesday, Lieutenant General Alexis Grinquich, the top U.S. Air Force commander for the Middle East, said that the pace of attacks has slowed somewhat over the past several weeks, meaning the Houthis may be running low on their supplies of drone swarms and anti-ship missiles. The general chalked it up to continued U.S. retaliatory strikes against Houthi targets. However, on the same day that the general made these comments, the militants decided to launch yet another attack. The Navy destroyer USS Gravely intercepted an inbound anti-ship ballistic missile and two aerial drones fired from Houthi-controlled territory into the Red Sea. Having failed to stop the attacks in any meaningful way, it looks like the Biden administration is now beginning to consider less kinetic means of solving the problem, potentially opening the door to diplomacy with the Iran-backed group. After holding meetings in Saudi Arabia and Oman, U.S. Special Envoy for Yemen Tim Lenderking told reporters, quote, "We favor a diplomatic solution. We know that there is no military solution," end quote. Do we know that? I mean, honestly, I suspect there could be a military solution, but also, I suppose, there's no reason not to try diplomacy, so fair go. According to a report in Forbes, Lenderking said that the U.S. was looking to offer the Houthis a, quote, "diplomatic off-ramp." We should play a drinking game where every time a diplomat uses the phrase off-ramp, you got to take a shot. And they would consider revoking its recent designation of Yemen's Houthis as terrorists if the militants cease their shipping attacks in and around the Red Sea. So wait. So if I understand this correctly, under the guidance, support, and resourcing of Iran, the Houthis have been attacking commercial shipping and targeting U.S. and allied military vessels for over 6 months. And we're thinking about taking them off the terrorist list if they just pretty please stop it. Now, it goes without saying, but I'm about to say it, that this would be an embarrassing reversal of a reversal for the Biden White House, which designated the Houthis a terrorist group in January of this year, after delisting them back in February of 2021. If you're confused, yeah, me too. And that, my friends, is the President's Daily Brief for Friday, 5 April. If you have any questions or comments, please reach out to me at pdb@thefirsttv.com. I'm Mike Baker, and I'll be back later today with the PDB Afternoon Bulletin. Until then, stay informed, stay safe, stay cool.